Hey, everybody, and welcome to another installment of your favorite podcast, Verbal Shenanigans. We got a lot of guests on the show today, so it's a packed show. And what makes this show awesome is that we also have some great sponsors that we are able to work with. One of those sponsors is Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Right in northwest Jersey here, there's a couple breweries around there. Make a day out of it. Go visit Joe Fisher in his Manskirt in the old bank building on Main Street. He's got eight beers on tap generally. He seasonally inspired ales. Just a really cool place to hang. We're very excited to work with them. On May 20th, they have two events, the Beer, Bacon, Barbecue Showdown in Morristown, and there's also Mayfest in Hackettstown. So you got, you know, two different areas you can go check out and drink their beer, have some fun. They also have a barrel-aged bottle release of their Wee Heavy and Barley Wine coming up in 2 weeks. So go check them out at manskirtbrewing.com or give them some love on Facebook and Instagram. Now, we are lucky enough to have three breweries sponsor this podcast, and another one of them is Demented Brewing, located in Middlesex, New Jersey, more in the central region. One of the coolest places to go drink a beer and have a good time. You got a tasting room that just has one of the coolest murals on it. I'd highly suggest you check that out. And they have like 16 rotating taps. It's awesome. Barrel programs, sour programs. They just released Mostly Mosaic, their Mostly Mosaic wheat beer. This coming Sunday, they're going to be releasing an all pale ale brewed with Motueka and El Dorado hops. Cans of Astarte and Gallows Hill are still available at the brewery. And the 2018 Sour Legion is now open for sign up. So sign up and you get whatever sours they are making through the year. So that is Demented Brewing. Now, the third and final brewery that we love having aboard is my favorite brewery to go visit out of state, and that is the Adirondack Brewery, located right in Lake George, New York. Just a wonderful place, great food, great beer, and just a cool place nestled right in Lake George there. They have the Adirondack 5K, 80K 5K registration launch party. So runners, you can sign on up, okay, May 23rd at 10 a.m. Race day is September 16th. But you can win the race to register and get big discounts. Come to the brewery on Sunday, May 21st from 3 to 7 for your chance to register early before registration opens up to the public. If you register in the brewery, you also save $5 off registration. Not only that, but Adirondack Pub and Brewery is offering anyone who signs up for the race 10% off food and a $5 Bobcat. What's a Bobcat? Bobcat Blonde Lager. Also, their sister restaurant in Lake George, the Moose Tooth Grill, is open for the season. So Moose Tooth Grill is kind of like, it's like the Rainforest Cafe for the Adirondacks. Very cool, very family friendly, lots of good beer there. So check out the Adirondack Brewery, one of our favorite sponsors to absolutely work with and to go to. I absolutely love that place. A woman by the name of Susan Robb, you may have heard her name thrown around the last few weeks. She also appears on this episode with a woman named Kim Ward. Susan's a speaker agent for, she represents a bunch of really cool people, and Center for Leadership Studies, which you heard last week. Now, you're going to hear them on the episode, Kim Ward and Paul Templer, who you may have heard in here. He's a hippo attack survivor. They are trying to put together a project where they are working on a television show, a 24-part television documentary series, three seasons of 8 shows per season, 50-minute production with 10 minutes per show allocated for advertising. They're looking to do a whole series on survivors, people who have survived amazing, life-threatening, all sorts of things. So it's called 90 North. It's an adventure. The working title of the television show is Under Construction. Executive producers Kim Ward and Paul Templer. And they're looking for funding. So Paul is a hippo survivor and just a really cool guy. You may have heard him on here. And Kim, she had an acclaimed show, Chatting in Manhattan. She's from Wisconsin. They really need some help putting this together. So look up 90 North and type it into the Google machine there. And they really looking for some money and some funds to make this happen and maybe get this thing put through. So we're glad to help them here on the podcast. So, and also check out Susan Robb on LinkedIn. Send her an email and send her a little message on Twitter. get one of her speakers to come to your event. So we got a really jam-packed, fun episode for you today. Igor Vovkovinsky joins us. He's the tallest man in America. Very open and honest interview. Then we have a transgender battle rapper by the name of No Shame. And then finally, we have Susan and Kim Ward on to talk about their projects that they have upcoming. Lots of fun. So let's get right to it. Enjoy the podcast. Yeah!
Hi, this is Igor Vovkovinsky, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Everybody, this is No Shame, the one and only transgender battle rapper, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Things in life have obstacles, though.
Yeah.
All. Mm-hmm. Chunky peanut butter. I don't think
watermelon pit.
Yeah, I see. I think like watermelons with no seeds. That's just weird. That's like a freak of nature.
Yeah.
How is that thing even alive?
I don't know. It's something science does, and
what's with these watermelons?
That should have been your opener when that show you did with three people.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
What's the deal with watermelons, everybody?
What's the deal with these seedless watermelons?
Where do they put them?
How do they grow?
I'm trying to figure out how the best situation here. All right, let's do this. All right, everybody. As we debate watermelons and peanut butter, welcome back to
our natural conversation off air.
Yes. As entertaining as we are on air, we are way more entertaining off air.
It's insane.
It's just crazy.
What's your thoughts on dryer lint?
What's your thoughts on detergent? Do you prefer with chemicals or the natural kind?
Do you put fabric softener in with your laundry?
I wouldn't even know what fabric, so the difference between a fabric softener and detergent.
I have no idea. Every once in a while, I throw those small sheets of paper in there, and yeah. I don't see any difference.
Yeah, I don't do whites and colors. Like I throw everything into one batch. Socks with dress shirts, underwear in the same. It doesn't matter to me. To me, they're all getting washed. I never really understood.
Yeah, I get mad when I go to the laundromat and I see somebody like change the buttons and all. It's like no, the answers on the right is the correct ones on every section. Speed, height.
Yeah, like maybe back in the day, like, I don't know, when the dye from shirts wasn't, like, everything turned red or something. But I can't even remember the last time that happened to, like, a shirt. I remember as a kid that seemed to happen a lot more. Like, oh, no, my shirt's dyed with red or whatever. They put something in there, but I don't know. Why is that? Why does that not happen anymore?
I don't know. Let's call Bill Nye the Science Guy.
This is the Cutting Edge Radio. You get.
That'd be great if we got him. We only asked him that one question.
Bill, you have a new Netflix show, but first.
When I put reds in with my whites, it's not staining like the old school days.
It's true, though. Why is that?
I don't know. Should we
look it up? I'm just going to stare at you until you come up with an answer.
I blame it on the Republicans.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Did you know? Look what happened in France. Big news out of France.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't even.
The guy beat the girl.
I wouldn't even know the first second about how to try to understand French politics.
I somewhat know a little bit about it just from watching Last Week Tonight. Mm-hmm. I do know, like, the female who lost, she had a very, like, Trump-like attitude, as in, I don't want Muslims in the country. Anybody who's in the country, they can't wear, like, any kind of headgear specific for their religion, stuff like that. So she was, like a crazy conservative. And just like here, it was like, everybody's like, ha, 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 ha. Wait a minute, she's in the finals.
Yeah.
But she lost.
Yeah, but to me, it's more funny just watching people on Facebook acting as if they know. If
that's how they go.
That's the noise. Yeah.
European Union!
As they know the first thing about what's going on. First off, they're the ones that post all day about American politics and make the most ridiculous posts. Yeah. And now they're posting about French politics now.
Yeah. Like the girl,
I never knew I was surrounded by so many geniuses. That's my point.
Yeah, the girl, she posted on Facebook, replied to somebody, and she put like two paragraphs there. I'm like, babe, why are you doing that? That's just insane. Nobody does that. Somebody counterpointed her with four paragraphs, and then a second comment with another two paragraphs. It's just like...
First off, one, who has the time? Two, who cares?
Yeah.
I can barely invest enough effort into, like, caring about Americans' politics. Yeah. Like, I'm just like, I don't really care.
I don't get it. It's like, you like spicy wings? No. Oh, okay. Next question.
Yeah, like,
I'm not going to debate you on this stuff.
I just don't care enough to really, really sink my teeth into it. Because in the end, until it really, like, affects my paycheck, it's basically a...
My paycheck's affected by digress.
Yes, you got no news going on in your life.
No. Emphasis on no.
But, I mean, there is a reason you're here early, chipper, awake.
1,000-pound gorilla is not on my back right now.
Yes, just you are the 1,000-pound gorilla now.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's a cool nickname. Michael Berlew, the 1,000-pound gorilla.
Yeah. What happened, buddy?
I was let go of my job as of last Wednesday, my friend.
Let go?
Yeah. I can't go into too many specifics, specifically because I have a severance package.
Right.
So I can't really
Along
say...
Along with a nice package.
Mm, yeah, well, that's true. That's true. But, I mean, that's why you call me the 1,000-pound gorilla.
This is true.
But... worked all weekend, was up in PA doing some other work, got called into an office, an HR person was there. They very much said, we're cutting back on staff, we no longer need the position, so unfortunately we have to let you go.
Did you have an idea this was coming at all?
Yes and no. I had an idea there was a decent possibility of some kind of time frame.
Yeah, you've been mentioning it. For a little while now.
Yeah.
You don't know what's coming.
Yeah, I kind of figured of a time frame. I figured it'd be later in the year with certain plans, but I didn't see it coming as in last week. I will say that.
So, was it like...
It was like, surprise!
Yeah, could you just come with us to the office kind of thing? Or
it was a weird moment. I was in training. Somebody scheduled a training at noon, so I was... like in a chipper mood to begin with, take away my lunch period for your training. And then they were trying to like, oh, can you come in? We got a meeting at 2, but we can do it early. I'm like, well, I'm in this training.
Right.
Oh, okay. And then they kept coming in a couple minutes afterwards. And it's just kind of like, will you leave me alone? I'm in the middle of training. And then it happened and all. And then the weird thing was kind of like, well, why didn't you just pull me out of training if you know this.
Can you hurry up over there so we could fire you? Like, can you get over here?
The point was, it was like training for support of somebody specific, and it's like, you know, I don't need this.
Right.
It's not like I get a certificate at the end where it's like, oh, look what I did. You know, just like, no, I really need you for a minute. You know, bring your laptop. We have to go over something, blah, 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 and go through the rest.
And so did they. Did they let you off easy? Was it just cut and dry?
It was, somebody started to spiel. I kind of said, put my hand up, turned over to the HR person, said, let's start going over to paperwork so I can get out of here. Because I was in Pennsylvania. It's an hour and a half drive back home.
So.
Apparently, for what I understood, they wanted me in Morristown on that day. They said, oh, somebody mentioned it in an email. And I'm like, I'm so busy. If you want me somewhere, you just send me a meeting request and I would be there.
But, right.
So it's like they messed up my firing. So
couldn't even get your firing correct.
Yeah.
All right, so...
But I'm not going to go into too many details. Like I said, I kind of got a severance package, signed off on that today, scanned it out, emailed it out. So maybe one day go...
Yeah, get a little deep into it. But yeah. You are, all in all, your feelings towards it are what?
It was a big relief. I got to say, I choked up a little bit telling my dad because, yeah. You know... Even though it's like, yeah, I know I'll eventually, no matter where I'm going to go, I'm going to be happy somewhere.
Right.
But, you know.
I mean, either way, you spent a good chunk of time there. I mean, I don't think it matters if the job was terrible. It's still, okay, now it's a moving on, you know, point, and it sucks either way. Like, yeah. There's no real happy part about it. It is definitely a relief for you going forward.
Yeah, exactly. But I got a little choke up. Telling the father. Then I was on the call with the girlfriend, and my mom was calling, so I conferenced her in, and then kind of the day it was in the Burlew family, I had that. My niece, who's getting close to giving birth to her boy, they found out he has something on his brain.
Oh, Jesus.
Some kind of growth. I forget what they exactly say, but, you know, there's a scary thing about that. For what I'm hearing now, it's kind of died down, but getting the initial news, I mean, all the terrible thoughts are coming in.
Of course, of course.
And also, my sister, her son from, I don't want to say her ex, they were never married, but the guy she had her last kid with, right. Now he's coming back into the picture, trying to get back into court to get some, you know, privileges with the child again. So it that all happened on the same day, so my mom was kind of busted up, so yeah. We had to kind of calm her down. But in the end, it was like one of those, you kind of just gaze to the road as you're driving along, and there's not a lot of what am I gonna do, whatever. It's almost like, okay.
Yeah, well,
life goes on.
I mean, you've been looking for something new, and this is maybe just forced the hand a little bit more. And
yeah, it kind of expanded my horizons. Now I'm starting to look at other states as well. So, yeah, it's a new journey coming up. Who knows what it will be afterwards?
Maybe we'll have to like give you quizzes on different states to see like what state you should live in. Like, where does Burlew belong?
Burlew, Mexico is not a state.
It'd be funny if you took all the tests and everything and like just like, you should do IT in Jersey. It's like, God damn it!
And the other cool thing was, like, I texted all the guys who reported to me. I had a couple guys in India and Bulgaria. I'm like, hey, guys, you know, thanks. I'm out. Here's my email. You know my number if you want to call or text. And every single one of them contacted me that same day.
Yeah, that's so good, man. Well, like I said, there's not really like a, it's like, oh, awesome, good job, and all. It's also not like, you know, that doesn't suck. It sucks. There's no really, other way to say it. But
in the end, you always want to go out on your own terms. But considering I'm getting some pay back and I have some time to figure out stuff, you know.
Well, let's see. There's a little. Let's see. Right. So if you're gonna move states here, let's see what kind of level this quiz is. Out of these foods, what's your favorite? Hot dogs, ice cream, strawberries, or seafood? What kind of guy are you?
I'm gonna say seafood. Strawberries were close, but I'll say seafood.
Okay. What's your favorite season? Winter, fall, spring, or summer?
Fall. Not even a debate.
Fall. What is your style? Are you lazy, grunge, casual, or hipster?
I would say casual.
You're a casual male.
Mm-hmm. Was that a...
Who's your favorite celebrity? Eminem, Channing Tatum, Zac Efron, or Beyonce? Those are your choices, Burlew. This is a really good quiz. It probably really is accurate.
I guess Eminem.
Well, it'll tie into the show today a little later.
All right.
Favorite activity, shopping, beaching, sports, or drugs?
Sports.
Yeah. Then drugs.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you do the drugs, so you do better at sports.
What's your favorite time of day? Evening, morning, afternoon, or night?
I guess afternoon.
The afternoon. Afternoon delight. Oh, you got to pick your favorite picture out of these.
Yeah, all right.
All right. So you have the New York City skyline. You got a bunch of dudes, which is probably
that's kind of weird.
A bunch of dudes. You got the beach. You got a heart. Oh, this one would be you and Izzy's favorite picture. It's you, two hands making a heart.
Yeah, both of us would have to hold the snow heart.
You have a mountain or you have a lighthouse. Which picture is your favorite?
I'm going to go mountain.
A mountain. Right.
No, don't give me the guys. Nothing wrong with it.
It's calculating your results.
All right.
And it says, Michigan, Berlo. Michigan is where you belong. You love the outdoors and appreciate the beauty and everything. You don't mind the cold weather. In fact, you even like it.
Get your
Red Wings jersey together.
They get like 2 feet of snow.
Go, Tigers, go. You know, so Michigan is where you belong.
Just because I said M&M?
Yep. Yep, I guess so. But, yeah.
Yeah, booming market in Detroit.
Yep, we're not Detroit. You ever see that funny commercial? It's about Cleveland. Like, it's like Cleveland, like, basically the only thing it has is LeBron James. But then at the end, it's like, we're not Detroit. Well, aren't anyway, buddy, just find a way to make this show so profitable that we both don't have to work.
All right.
All right, so just get on that.
All right, I'm gonna
I mean, you got tonight. Lots of time.
Mm-hmm.
You've had 3 days off of work.
Close to a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it, like, weird? Like, not getting is it, like, what do
well,
I
like
do
like, the
tonight?
First phone call I got, I still said my company name, this is Mike. And then, like, Izzy looked at me, she's like, why are you doing that? And I'm like, I did it for like 15 years. Old habits are hard to break.
Well, onward and upward, buddy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on to the next thing. You know, it is what it is. But
speaking of which, who's our guest?
So we've been trying to put this together for a little while. We are getting the tallest man in America on the show. Okay, you've reached out
USA,
to this guy.
USA.
So, Berla, before we do it, why don't you warm up with his name? Let's warm up. Here
all
we
right,
go.
All right. All Igor.
Right. Igor. Yep.
Vovkovinsky.
I think that's correct, man. Vovkovinsky. That's how I would pronounce it. So if it's wrong, I can't make fun of you.
Okay.
Because that's pretty much how I would say it. But he's the tallest man in the United States, apparently. Standing in at a whopping. Let me see. What do we got here? 7 foot
8 1/4.
7 foot 8 1/4 inches. Ridiculous. But let's give him a little call here and see what's up. Igor, what's up, man?
Hi.
What's going on? Let me see if we got your last name correct. We're going to give it a shot. Is it Igor Vovkovinsky?
Yes, sir.
Oh, we got it on the first try. See, my partner Mike here has a brutal way of butchering words, so we've been practicing for like a good week, a good solid week to get your name correct. But welcome to the show, and thanks for giving us a few minutes here, man.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Now, Igor, we were looking for your official height online. We got a couple of different things. So you are, I mean, even your Skype is tallest man in America, correct? You are standing in, do we have this correct, 7'8"?
Yep, even a little bit taller. It's 7'8.33".
So, I mean, that's one incredible. Now, the way you said it, like, do you, like, frequently get measured or, like, is it some kind of record that has to be proven every once in a while, like, in case you're growing more?
I stop growing when normal teenagers stop growing, like, around 18, 19 years old.
Okay.
And I got officially measured by the Guinness Book of World Record people in 2010.
Oh, wow.
And I have a certificate hanging on the wall here in my house saying that I'm the tallest man in America.
Wow. Now, how do you compare? Who's the tallest man in the world? How far are you from him?
You know, there are quite a number of guys who are over 8 foot tall, but I don't really keep track of them because it seems like every year there's a they find a new really tall guy somewhere. I don't know how these guys keep hiding from everyone, but every year they seem to find another big guy. So I don't know. Whatever.
Go ahead, Mike. Now, was this all with genetics, or did you have one of the gland problems where people keep growing and so forth?
Yeah, I was born with a pituitary tumor. Hmm. And it was pressing down on the whatever it is that controls the growth. And so we came here to the United States to have it removed, and that's how we wound up here.
That's actually what was going to be my next question. I know you you grew up in the Ukraine?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you came here to have this surgery. Now, as a kid, before you had the surgery, how tall were you already at that point?
So when we came here, I was almost 7 years old, and I was already 6 foot tall.
Wow. Mm. Wow. Now, that's got to be like, were you going to like normal school? Was that a hard time growing up being that tall? Or what, did you not really even, you know, did it not really affect you?
You know, back when I was growing up in Ukraine, I didn't even really, it didn't bother me at all that I was so tall, because for the most part, all the kids were, you know, really nice, and everybody kind of around our area knew what was going on, and so I didn't really have any problems with that kind of stuff. It's when I came here and I started going to elementary school and middle school and high school that I was bullied constantly, but not back home in Ukraine.
Huh. Interesting.
So tell me, how is the health right now that you had the surgery? Being that tall, do you go into issues like the knees, back, feet, anything like that?
Well, as far as that kind of stuff, I don't know how much of it is related to being tall. Right now, for these last 5 or 6 years, I'm having tremendous problems with my legs and feet. And I keep getting wounds on my feet, and then I also have chronic pain in my legs and feet that is there 24 hours a day, and it drives me absolutely bonkers because the pain is just tremendous. So I think that has probably to do with being, you know, so tall and so big. I'm sure that has a role, yeah.
Now, let me ask you something. So you, as you're growing through the years, you had the surgery and whatnot. I could picture American coaches, like basketball coaches and sports, looking at you and trying to see if you were capable of things. Like, did you have a lot of that, or?
Not really. No, I played basketball for the city league when I was in middle school, and then I tried playing for a year in high school, but at that time it was already not possible because I didn't have any tennis shoes, and nobody wanted to make me any tennis shoes, so I really couldn't play.
I was going to get into that. Well, your shoes and clothes and whatnot. Like, first off, shoes have to be a commodity for you. Like, I'm assuming you definitely have to get them custom made and whatnot. Is there a technical size to your shoe? And if so, like, who makes them for you?
Well, the latest shoes that I have were made by Reebok. And I believe that they told me that I have approximately a size 24 and 10 wide.
Jeez.
Mm.
Yeah, I was reading up on an article. It was like 25K worth of shoes they gave you, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's approximately how much the first pair of shoes cost, because they had to make a custom mold.
Wow.
And that part is the part that really costs a lot of money. Pairs of shoes that they make afterwards, they maybe cost around $500-$600. But it's that first step that really, really hurts.
Now, you said you obviously got picked on. You were saying a lot in school and whatnot. Now that you are older and you've been recognized by all sorts of things, I see you've been on kind of something like 60 Minutes and
in the movie Hall Pass.
Hall Pass and a bunch of different things. You're out there. Looks like campaigning for Obama. Like, it seems like you're very. I mean, you're even advertised the world's tallest man in America. Have you been able to try to talk to kids at all about bullying and, you know, the effects it had on you? Or do you ever get any kind of opportunity to try to overcome that and tell people your experience?
I've only really had one opportunity to do that in front of a high school here in a nearby city. That was about 7, maybe 8 years ago. But about the time that I became interested in doing stuff like that is when I started having all the problems with my feet. Mm-hmm. And I'm no longer, for large amounts of time, I wasn't allowed to walk. I had to be off my feet.
Jeez.
And so a lot of the things that I want to do have been put on the back burner.
See, you're going to you're a law student now. What college did you go to currently?
Oh man, I don't even want to mention them, because it was such a terrible experience. It was a complete ripoff. It was just a nightmare. I don't want to give them any advertisement or give any light of day.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, man. Can you tell us what exactly happened? Well, tell us about the college itself or what happened.
It's just, it's a for-profit college.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I chose to go there was because they had a much smaller campus, which my mother and I both agreed would be easier for me, that I wouldn't have to walk a half a mile between classes.
Right.
But the level of education is just pathetic, and it's so incredibly expensive, and I had to drop out a number of times because I had to have surgeries. And they wouldn't give me any type of, they wouldn't work with me at all. And so I ended up having to pay for a lot of college time that I never actually attended classes.
Mm. Sounds like a great institute.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And so now I'm in debt basically for the rest of my life. And I don't. Don't know when I'm ever gonna pay this stuff off.
Jeez.
Jesus.
Well, that doesn't sound very fun. But what are you, what are you doing with your life? Like, are you able to support yourself? Are you,
it's been a constant struggle for these last 6 years or so because of all my surgeries I've had. I think 27 surgeries on my left foot.
Jeez.
And so I can't work, and I can't really do anything to have an income. And so I rely solely on my mom.
Wow, man. Now, let me ask you something. Like, being so tall and so large, just living a normal life, like as far as the home and getting around and transportation, stuff like that. What kinds of things have to be customized just in order to do the basic things that we all take for granted?
Well, when we finally decided to build our first home, because previous to this house, we always lived in apartments here, we basically had a meeting with the builders, and we told them that a few things need to be custom. First of all, we need to have tall doors. They have to be at least 8 foot tall. Second of all, we need to have high ceilings. And then third, it's basically my bathroom has to have high counters and a specially built shower. And those are the basic three items that were customized for our home. But otherwise, like in the kitchen, everything is normal height because, you know, mom has to use all the two. So,
right.
So everything else in the house is normal. It's just those three main items that are custom. And as far as transportation, I'm very fortunate that I was able to start driving when other people can start driving. I started at the age of 16.
Right.
For the first, I believe, maybe 5 years or so, I drove around in minivans. And then we purchased a full-size van, and I've been driving that ever since.
Nice. Hmm. Well, at least that's, you know, some things that seem to have gone your way. It seems like you've gone through a lot of struggles here.
Now, Igor, you must get sick of all the questions about your height and stuff. Why don't you tell us about some other hobbies and interests in your life that keeps you occupied during the days?
Listening to podcasts.
Well, I love watching mixed martial arts.
Nice.
I'm a huge UFC fan. I have my buddies over to my house every couple months for the pay-per-views.
Igor, do you know the Miller brothers, Jim and Dan Miller? Jim Miller.
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah, you should. I know I sound like I'm promoting the podcast, but a couple weeks ago we got to sit down with both brothers and do an interview with them. I'll send you the link afterwards.
James Krause, who's on the latest season of The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah. I'll send those links over to you.
Excellent.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but go ahead.
Besides that, I read a lot. I answer emails that I get from people around the world because every now and then, like the National Geographic will replay one of the documentaries that I was in.
Right.
In some part of the world. And so every few months I'll start getting emails from let's say Turkey, or all of a sudden I get emails from Japan. And so I like to answer, you know, even with just a couple sentences, but I like to answer all my emails that I get from fans.
For what sounds like you definitely have some struggles and some unfortunate things that happen, but through your height, it seems like you've been able to do or talk to a lot of people from all over the planet, not even just the country. Is there something that stands out to you, like that really shows the reach of just even like the internet, or someone you've talked to, or, you know, someone that's you couldn't even imagine, or something that you've done that you couldn't even imagine in a million years, but because you're you're known by your height and whatnot? Is there something that stands out?
I am really bad at telling how many years went by. I want to say maybe around 12 years or so. because of my height, I got noticed by a Japanese television station, and they contacted us and wanted us to come to Japan to be on their show. And so through some negotiating with interpreters and working out some logistical problems, eventually we got to fly to Tokyo, and we had an amazing time there. They really treated us well, and that was something that I never thought I would ever get to do in my life, because it's just if we ever go anywhere on vacation,
right,
we always go to Ukraine. So going to Tokyo was a great treat, and the people there were very nice to us, and it was just an all-around great trip.
It's pretty amazing, you know? Like, sometimes I always think about, you know, we do this little show right out of my house, and, mm-hmm. you know, just the people we've been able to, even just you, you know, like, we just... The internet has made a very big world seem like a very small world sometimes. Just some of the people we've been able to get in touch with or email or have the pleasure just to, who will even give us like a few minutes of their time. It just sometimes it amazes me. Like, okay, wow, they said yes, or they said absolutely, you know?
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool. Now, let me ask you something. You... you're from the Ukraine. You said you go back often. Now, I have a buddy from Ukraine also who he goes back every once in a while, and he talks about the state of Ukraine and, you know, the dangers of whatnot. When you go back there, are you like recognized as a, you know, like not, maybe not a hero is the right word, or just like someone, a celebrity that people know? Do you find it harder to go back to Ukraine in the condition with the things that are going on, or?
Well, the last time we were there was, I believe, 2013 or 2013.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there wasn't anything going on with any revolution or, you know, any of that. So, as far as that goes, we didn't have any trouble, but it's very hard for me to go just walking around, you know, the downtown area like we love to do, and see the sights that we used to see when we lived in Ukraine, because I can't take a step without somebody asking for a photo,
really,
you know, or asking questions, and so I get exhausted because... I basically don't get a vacation because all day long I have to smile for the cameras.
Mm, right.
And so to me, it's not really a vacation until I get back to the apartment and just some of our friends come over, and then I can enjoy myself. Gotcha. But going out, sightseeing, and doing things, it's just so exhausting for me. And I have been in Ukrainian newspapers quite a number of times. So people kind of recognize me, but even if they don't recognize me, it doesn't stop them from asking me questions. And
mm-hmm. I mean, I guess straight up asked, I mean... Even as we contacted you for the podcast, it was because of your height. Does it get a little old that the first thing everybody goes to is your height and doesn't go into other conversations with you? Or can you learn to accept it? How does it work for you nowadays?
You know, you would think that it wouldn't bother me anymore, but after the first 3,000 times that it happens each day, I get very irritated, and because that's all people really care about. Nobody cares what my name is or where I'm from or what I do. All they want to know is how tall I am, why I'm so tall. Can they have a photo? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's all they care about.
Interesting.
Yeah. I care about his name because I can't say his last name. That's true. The biggest reason I care.
I care about this little picture I'm seeing. That you were on the Eurovision Song Contest?
Yeah, I was part of Team Ukraine. Yeah.
Huh. Now, what it like? I don't. Do we have? It says it's kind of like. What show is that? Kind of like European. What is that? Like you have to sing a song or create a song? What?
I don't have to. I didn't have to sing a song. I was just part of the team, and so our singer, basically she does kind of like a special entrance onto the stage, and I played the role of like kind of like a mythical giant who carries her on my arms to the stage.
Nice.
And they contacted me via email, and at first I thought this was some kind of a joke, and I didn't even answer. And then finally, they kept sending me emails, and I answered, and I said, who is this that is right. Making fun of me and stuff? And they said, this is a real offer. We would like to propose this to you. We'd like to fly you out, ahead of time to practice all this so we can rehearse it perfectly. And so... it was a tremendous opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
That's awesome.
It was just, it's awesome, yeah.
Well, we're working on a play where you carry Mike around, if you're interested.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have a plot yet. We'll just have you carry me around for a couple minutes and figure out the rest from there.
It's what you call in development. But that's where it starts. That's all we have written so far. So we'll extend you the offer.
Excellent.
Igor, I want to thank you for giving us some time. Like I said, it's nice to get past even the hype stuff and just have an actual conversation with you. And we'd love to talk to you in the future if you got anything going on. So thank you again. Is there anything anywhere that people can say hi to you or tweet at you or check out things that you're doing?
Probably the place that I prefer to stay in contact with is on Twitter. My handle is Igor, and then the number 2, and then the word tall. Igor Too Tall.
Awesome.
I love hearing from people. If anyone wants to say hi or just talk or whatever, I'm up for it. Yeah.
Or have you carry them around? Maybe, yeah. maybe that's how you can start repaying the debt. You know, have Igor carry you for an hour. There's some big money in that, brother. Yeah. Igor, thanks so much, man, and we really hope you you're able to raise the funds and whatnot to get out of some of the problems you're in, and hopefully maybe this helps and get some people to listen to your story.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. All right, man. Oh. Good interview. I mean,
it's good to get the other story, not just why
people might know you, but. I mean, even with our show, we're guilty of it. I mean, that's what we reach out for. We look for interesting people. And hopefully, after the first couple of initial questions, we're able to get past that, just have a conversation.
Just talk to you.
But it is, it is sad to hear some of the things he's got to go through. And
I can only imagine.
The debt thing is, something a lot of us deal with. Mm. But the way he talked, it didn't sound like it was a good situation.
Yeah.
But with the health problem, it makes you, it's cool, like he's 7'8", but you probably just don't even realize how much.
Yeah, all you care about is picture. This guy's very tall, instead of being like, well, what's it like to be the guy who is tall?
Yeah, like we talk to him for a half hour. He wakes up every day in that kind of pain and 20-something surgeries. But very good interview and very well-spoken, very nice guy.
Yeah.
So
maybe we can do a 50-50 sometime to raise some funds for him.
Yeah, we could do something. I'll talk to him maybe privately on the old Twitter machine.
Oh.
Well,
Twitter has its own machine now.
It does. The old Twitter machine, the old Facebook machine.
It doesn't sound that convenient. No. You know, you got to go out to an ATM and just tweet out your 142 words and go back home.
142 characters.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. All right, so that was Igor.
Mm-hmm. Kovinsky.
Dude, you're getting good.
I know.
You're getting... You know what? Did you ever think about maybe, like, translation as a job?
Since I haven't mastered English, probably not.
I wasn't talking about English.
Pig Latin. Just look over to the Japanese guy. What the hell are you saying?
Remember that episode of Always Sunny where... Flowers for Charlie, where he thinks he's smart, and he picked up like Cantonese, and mm-hmm. and he just turned out he's rambling the whole time.
You're not talking my language. This is just gibberish.
He's like, but I was talking about, Alex's dream.
Okay.
So the other day, it's Saturday morning. You know, we're sleeping in a little bit, mm-hmm. and I go to like do the nice like spoon.
The nasty spoon. That's for another episode.
That's a different dirty podcast. Spoon. That's for a different podcast.
Shenanigans at night.
Late night shenanigans. Mm-hmm. And I go to like come on. She's like no, which is. She's done it before. She's like...
She's talking in her sleep.
Yeah, like she's kind of like, get away from me. No, ow. And then, no, I'm like, she's being real mean. I'm like, all right, well, whatever. So I like roll over. I'm like, that was weird. I'm like, what are you being mean? Like later, so later on after we woke up, I'm like, what was that? She's like, oh, I don't know. I had a bad dream. I was mad at you. Now, this is not the first time. Like I apparently am just a monster in her dreams. Like I am always in trouble. Like
you're the Scottish Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. So apparently she goes, okay, I had this dream that you were like, hey, babe, I'm going out on a porn shoot. Do you want to come? Like, one, I guess I'm a porn star, and, like, it's just so casual. I'm like a comedy show. Hey, you want to come tonight?
Well, when there's only three people at the comedy show, you know you can get a few more at a porn show.
Yeah. So she says that. She's like, yeah, I guess or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I won't. Don't worry. I won't do anybody or whatever or something like that. So apparently,
why are you going?
I know. So you're apparently, the worst there's all porn these people,
star ever.
All these people around, like all these chicks, and I just start like going at it with somebody.
Okay.
And apparently, I was wearing like orange women's underwear, also.
Hmm.
So
like frilly,
like or? Lacy, ooh. Like sexy kind of orange women's underwear, and I was in a porn.
I could see you trying that. I don't know why, but I could see you trying that.
Well, if this comedy thing doesn't work out,
you should just go on stage, huh?
Hey, guy. Yeah, so she was mad at me in real life for this, and this isn't the first time she's been mad at me. Like. She's like, oh, well, I had this dream you were cheating. Apparently, I'm just like a big player, like in her dreams. And then, like, I don't know, kind of strange. You ever get in trouble in Dream World?
Trouble in Dream World. I'm trying to think. Like, Izzy has very, like, vivid dreams. It's just very weird. Like, every time she's like, I had a dream, it's 20 minutes of an explanation there. I don't think I did anything wrong, but, like, every time it's like an adventure where it's like, oh, her dog from, like, 10 years ago, she found out from somebody the dog wasn't dead, so we had to, like, find out where she buried it and try to save it, and we're, like, digging holes all over the yard. And
it's like a plot to a movie. Not bad. But, it was very bizarre. Mm. And this isn't the first time either, but...
I had one really vivid dream, and this was when I was dating another girl, and I guess... I was like chasing somebody and trying to.
That wasn't a dream.
No. Well, but I was like chasing. I guess they were like committed a crime or something. And I go up to them and I grab them. Like, where do you think you're going? And apparently, I actually did it in my real life. And so she was in bed. And she's like, I had to hold still. I had no idea what you were up to, but I did not want to.
I like how you had some awesome like action hero line too. Like,
where do you think you're going? Detective Burroughs on the case.
I told you one time. I think I talked about this once before. I had a dream that
I was with like the SEAL team that like we were hunting Osama bin Laden or one of them, and like we were in like mansion and like there's all these secret like caves you went through. There were like fireplaces, like Clue kind of. It was all. I woke up like
we went through the cave. Yeah. We ran the conservatory afterwards.
It was really fun.
I just saw that movie a couple weeks ago. That thing still holds up. I love that movie.
Oh, Clue. Yeah, that was a good like middle of the day like Comedy Central. It was always on.
It was like it was on Logo. Apparently, a lot of gay people are into it because it was hosted by a gay guy and he has like guest drag queens and they were talking to Michael McKean. And they literally asked him, and they're like, "Gay people love this movie. Do you know why?" And he's like, "I guess it's like a dress up character thing where people get into it and stuff." But
interesting.
That movie's awesome.
It is a good movie. It is a good movie. Speaking of like weird comedy things, I had a woman I work with like, "Oh, you do, you know, you run some shows." A friend of mine wants to put on a show for the firehouse. Like, she's involved in the fire. I'm like, "Yeah, we can certainly do it." So I call the woman, and she's like, "Okay." I'm like, "Oh, so I know you're interested in running a show." And she's like, yeah. So the date is blah, 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 and we're doing a beefsteak and bingo night. I'm like, "Oh, okay." I'm like, "Well, one, I don't see where comedy fits into this equation." She's like, "I thought, like, it would be really neat to have, like, a comedian come and, like, tell dirty jokes in between, like, calling bingo, like adult humor." She's like, "How fun is that?" I'm like, in my head, I'm like, "Are you freaking kidding me? Like, this is not a good idea, one, and I ain't doing this, two." Eventually, I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm booked that day. Sorry." But I'm like, "But if you ever want to run a show, like, I don't know why people just think it's awesome to cram comedy. First off, comedy needs to be, like, on its own in a separate room and, you know, people paying attention. It's like when the shows where they're in the middle of bars, you know, like a couple of those comedy shows where they're in the middle bar. People are, like, trying to relax after their day of work, and you're like, "Listen to me, tell my new penis joke." Like, it doesn't work. No. You know, like,
especially when you go to, like, different events. Like, I remember, I think it was at Six Flags for, I think I went to see the Beach Boys. And, you know, they're riling the crowd. It was a pretty big crowd for a Six Flags concert. "Are you ready for the Beach Boys? You guys ready to see them? All right, here they come. But first," and they brought out a comedian, and that poor son of a bitch.
It's like when they have a comedian at, like, private parties or something like that. Like, "Oh, he's going to come warm up the
That poor man. Like, he was out there for 10 minutes. I mean, he was a veteran because he kind of said, "Yeah, I know you hate me. Let's get through this tent, everybody. Let's get through this
together." Yeah, like warm-up comedians for concerts and private parties. Like, one comedian, like, I know there's a comedian that does bridal showers. Like,
what?
Yeah, like, she'll come and just, like, roast, like,
the bride?
The bride and other people. Apparently, she makes very good money doing it. I know this because the person I work with had her come do it. So, I mean, where there's money, there's a comedian that will do it. Like, I guarantee if I threw that on Facebook, like, "Hey, I need a comedian to read Dirty Bingo, Dirty Bingo." And I'm like, "What, are you interested?" I'd probably have 20 emails.
All the people that you say, no, I can't put you on the show. Yeah. Bam.
What do you mean, bro? I put everybody on the show.
Oh, you can edit that. No. Scott is very good at giving everybody a shot.
Yes. Well, there is only so many spots.
Exactly.
That's true. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just like, don't cram comedy into everything. So sometimes comedy's not needed. Like, reading Dirty Bingo. No, like, I made a stupid joke. Like, imagine me being like, you know, B69. B18. You better B18. Like, I can't even imagine the hack.
Oh, my. Yeah. 72.
Is that your age, baby, or your breast size? Like, I couldn't even imagine the douche chills, like, doing the flop sweat.
It's also, like, SportsCenter. I can't stand, like, they all want to be comedians now. And it's just like, well, you just show me the highlights. What's this guy in the crowd doing? He's watching a game.
You ever notice that, like, a football player retires and they automatically get a job, like, commentating, like being on one of those the pregame shows now have like 150 guys in suits in there. It's like a desk with like nine. Yeah. It's like terrible. And like, you know, you got to have the guys in the flashy yellow suits and like, you know, they're all like, I don't know, the Giants, Steve. I'm going Giants. Giants today. They get to win. And every pregame show is just a bunch of babbling idiots like, all right, I'm going Bears. Bears get to win today. And it's just like,
hey, they play for it. It's like, why I got to go with the Giants? Why? And then, I used to play for them, but that means you don't even know the answer then.
And then even like the games, you have the commentating team, and then they're like, let's go to the desk, and it's like another team of guys, and then it's like...
Now there's people who do like the game break instead of the pregame, because I guess they're too busy. Then you got a person on the field. It's a big game. You got two people on the field.
I think I just heard like Jay Cutler or something. Like,
he's
Simon Fox or one of them.
Well, I know he auditioned for like the second seat to take James Lynch, but apparently that's what they all do. That's why apparently Romo retired. He's like, I know these other guys are going to retire, and there's going to be prime seats, and I'm not sure if I'm going to get a prime seat again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't fault them. It's probably a lot easier than getting your head bashed in every week, like for money. But still, it's like, I don't know, it's obnoxious. But we are on to second guest, because now our episodes just are like. Two guests, three guests. Yeah, pretty soon we're just going to get an eight-hour episode. But we got an interesting one. You want to introduce this one?
Yeah. I contacted this person over Twitter. If you are a fan of epic rap battles of history, you know this rapper from the battle of Bruce Banner versus Bruce Jenner, where she played Caitlyn Jenner. Her real-life name is Jolie Drake. She goes by No Shame, and she is an American transgender battle rapper.
That's quite unique.
In Texas.
We know how much you love epic rap battles of history. Mm-hmm. You proved it to us one time with Walter Tidy Whitey. Like, you knew
every... Oh, that was Walter White versus Walking Dead. Rick Grimes.
Yeah. We know. You listened to it multiple times.
They're on break.
Yeah.
I don't know when they're coming back.
Gotcha. Michigan. Maybe you should sing it for us before we go.
Well, I haven't done one in a while. I haven't listened to one in a while.
I'm sure you haven't.
Yeah.
And probably the same ones over and over again. Hey, is this No Shame?
It is.
No Shame. It's Scott Brennan and Mike Berlow here from Verbal Shenanigans. How you doing?
How you guys? I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great.
Doing good, man. So Mike is a big fan of the epic rap battles of history. In fact, I was just making fun of him because he could recite verses from... multiple ones, and I also often catch him watching it before we start the podcast. So feel free to battle rap Mike at any point in this little interview.
Okay.
Alrighty. So you are you in Texas right now?
What's that now?
Are we calling you in Texas right now, or?
Yes, I'm in Dallas.
Dallas, Texas. Now, let me ask you something. So, how does one get their start in battle rapping? I can't imagine there's like a huge, like, everyday market for that. How did you even get involved in this?
Well, I mean, before I ever transitioned, like when I was younger, I battle rapped like freestyle,
right?
Back in the 8 Mile era, and then when I transitioned, I actually followed this league called A-Hat and just started watching battles and thought, they write now, like they prepare for their opponents and stuff. That's different. So, and I was like, I'm kind of, over the whole battling thing. But I was talking to a friend of mine who's actually like in radio and would often put on events here. He just kind of like talked to me and encouraged me and told me basically, what other trans person is going to get out there on a stage and battle rap to show other people that, it's not that big of a deal? And I was like, well, that's kind of a good point. So from that point on, I just decided that I was going to be the one that got up there and took the brunt of it and gave it back.
How much time do you have to prepare for it, or do you prefer a face-to-face, right in the moment kind of battle rap?
Well, I mean, I still like, you know, I'm old school, so I like the fact that you can, you know, freestyle a battle, but it's just not, if I went into a battle now with nothing written, I would just get eaten alive because these guys are so, they're so smart. They take the, you get a month, maybe 2 months to know who you're going up against, and they'll literally, you know, they'll Google you, they'll research your family history, they'll do whatever they can to get an advantage to, like, pick you apart in a battle. So,
right, so it's like
kind of have to do the same thing.
It's like roast battle, kind of like how that's becoming a big thing on the comedy circuit. The roast battles now, you're like, you have a couple weeks to write your jokes.
Mm-hmm. And then you see the roast battles, actually, there's been two or three, you know, battle rappers who have done well on the at least the Comedy Central roast show. I know Sharone, I mean, he killed when he was on there. So
right. Interesting. Now let me. So you. This battle rap thing, where is this taking place? Is this taking place mostly in clubs at night? Is it, is it like the 8 Mile thing where it's on the corner of the streets? Like, where are you finding most of the stuff? And do you guys get, like, a big crowd for it? Do people follow it? Like, and who's judging these kind of things?
Well, we don't judge it really per se. Like, the crowd just kind of, at this time, like, people just kind of, like, give their opinion on YouTube, like, who they thought won.
Okay.
As far as, like, you know, you don't get the spontaneous, like, bust out on the street corner kind of battles like they used to. Like, in the early 2000s, like, Smack videos, they would meet, you know, it'd be like, oh, this rapper's Harlem, you know, this rapper's Brooklyn, let's meet, and, you know, Queens, and we're going to have a rap battle. And they would film it, and then they put it out on tape. Now it's like, I get a contact, they're like, hey, you know, are you interested in battling these two people, okay? Out of those two, who do you prefer? All right, now you're locked in. Got the date. Then they book a venue. And, like, if you do San Jose, San Francisco, you're looking easily at 60 people up to 150, depending on the league, the, you know, the event, the venue, the names that are on the card. You know, there's leagues that do every video they put out is at least 100K. And some of them are doing a half a mil, you know?
Jesus.
So they make a living off of battle rap. There's KOTD, Smack. I mean, there's leagues that where at least the owners are eating, you know?
What kind of rap scene is out there in Texas? I mean, obviously, when you think of battle rap, you don't. Texas is probably around the 49th or 50th state I would think about for that.
Well, actually, Texas is its problem is there's so many leagues out here that nobody, and it's always kind of been like this with the music scene as far as rap goes here, except for in Houston, where they, in the late 90s, kind of got things together. But most of the state has always kind of, like, looked out for themselves, and that's kind of how these battle leagues out here are. So I looked for my first opportunity with AHAT because they were the third largest league in the United States, and that's the largest league that would give me a platform. So that's who I contacted, and they just so happened to have a division that was willing to have me come out. So of all places, my first written battle was in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Really? Salt Lake City, Utah, as a transgender rapper. That's that is something I never thought I'd hear in one sentence.
And to be honest, I don't think I ever got a better, like, response from a crowd than I did in Salt Lake City. Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, let me ask you. So you are a transgender rapper. Now, when you decided to, I mean, even in your name, it says no shame, to approach this, you probably took just poundings of insults, and probably every word under the sun's been thrown at you. Obviously, that's probably the first thing I would assume they attack you with, but I'm sure it gets pretty, you know, played out quick, and I'm sure that's they don't, if you know, since you actually have talent doing this, they don't see it coming, and I'm sure that's like a big advantage to you almost, because they're going to go with the obvious, like, it's like if someone's fat, they're going to go with the fat jokes first, you know? Is that what you see?
Yeah, most part, people go to the obvious angle, no matter if it's my 10th battle or, you know, they're still on it.
Right.
But I mean, it is an advantage because sometimes I can play it where I can flip it around, you know, like I was battling a girl, Bonnie Godiva, who just, she landed on Wild N' Out, actually. She's the new cast member on there. But she was my last battle, and I had a line where, you know, I made sure to put on all this makeup tonight so no one would say shit if I hit this bitch. You know, it's like, if that was, you know, a regular guy and I said that, the crowd wouldn't respond well to it. They would have been like, oh, that's not cool. But then because I said it, it was okay because, well, I'm no shame. So. And I can say it to a guy, too. I can say, I'm going to hit you. And then it's almost worse because if I say I'm going to threaten you and you're supposed to be this tough card.
Yeah, emasculates them.
I pocket checked a guy in a battle, and you know, my closing line for that round was, you know how you can't leave here with any self respect because the trans chick just walked up and you got pocket checked. So,
interesting.
So, why don't you tell us a little bit about like growing up? About how long into your life did you realize that you wanted to transition?
Understanding the concept of transition was something that obviously didn't happen until later in life. I just didn't know it was like an option, you know? Like,
right.
But as far as like childhood memories and stuff go, I mean, me and my mother and I both have memories of me, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old and her clothes, her high heels, her, you know, grabbing all her stuff and gravitating towards what she liked more than, you know, the male stuff.
Right.
But, you know, mid-80s, it's like, okay, that's cool. Here, you want a doll? Here's a G.I. Joe. You know, here's a Transformer. It's cool, too, you know? So I ended up playing with both Barbies and Transformers and stuff. And there was an age, though, where my mom just kind of was like, okay, you know what? 9-year-old boys don't play with My Little Pony, so you're not going to...
Sadly, 40-year-olds now play with My Little Pony.
Yeah.
They dress up in outfits now, and that's totally acceptable.
maybe the Transformers were a metaphor. Yeah. Maybe.
There's more than meets the eye. I don't know. Do you guys have, was it Voltron? Do you remember that show?
Oh, yeah. Basically, it was the first Power Rangers. I think it was a complete ripoff of Voltron.
yeah, absolutely it was. But when we'd always play, and I had a group of friends that was like our thing was Voltron, for some reason I always ended up a princess, you know? Yeah.
Red Lion, Blue Lion, Princess Lion, unite!
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I was just always a little bit different. What's crazy, though, is like no one ever really picked up on it.
Yeah.
And then by the time I was in fourth, fifth grade, I was just into baseball and bigger than most of the other kids. So trust me, no one was going to be like, you know what, I think you're kind of feminine, because then they might have just, you know, gotten beaten up.
Now, let me ask you, so were you, when you did decide to transition and actually, like, embrace this and come out with it, did you have a supportive family, or was it a battle with that?
I think I was nervous for no reason, really, you know. Right. I always kind of said I wanted to wait it till, you know, my dad passed, and unfortunately, I ended up almost forgetting it, because I told my dad 3 days before he did pass away.
Whoa.
And he just, it's, you know, I will always love you, and that was it, you know. He just accepted me for whoever I wanted to be, and he was okay with that. And the night that I told him is actually the night he was taken to the hospital, and he never came home. So it was hours later.
So do you almost feel a regret not telling him earlier?
Yeah, I wish he would have had a chance to have really get to know me being comfortable, rather than, you know, just the anxiety filled young man that he was subjected to.
Now, you've gotten some recognition, you know, obviously just your background is unique and whatnot. Do you, Are you able to become a person that like the LGBT community turns to? Do you work with people who are maybe like you said in your situation, we're afraid to come out and because we have one guest, AJ Mattioli. He's transitioning. He checks in with us like once a month or so and tells us what's going on. And we've also had the model Rain Dove on, who's like a androgynous kind of model, modeled as a female one day, as a man. Are you able to reach out to the community and help a little bit, or do you get that opportunity?
I occasionally will get letters and things from especially younger people, you know, just telling me that they appreciate what I'm doing. The Epic Rap Battle really did give me a platform to reach a lot of not even, you know, LGBT or queer youth, but just kids that were just a little bit different, who were afraid to do things, you know, because they were nervous. But I think there's an expectation, especially even in the LGBT community, even in the trans community, of what like a trans person should be, you know, like if you transition, well, why would you transition if you're not really that feminine, or why would you, you know, that like people, and I identify as not just a lesbian, but I also like almost a butch lesbian. I don't, and I've had some, I don't know, like people who don't really understand or accept me even within like the LGBT community. They just don't get it. It's like, why, if you're going to transition, shouldn't you go further, or shouldn't you? But it's just about a level of where you're comfortable, right, you know? And I found my level on kind of that athletic, aggressive side. It's just that when I unwind, I tend to be a little more feminine and more, you know, reserved. And it's hard, I think, for people to understand that. And so for that reason, not only have I not like had tons of people like, oh, you're so awesome, but I've almost had like a backlash even from some parts of the LGBT community.
Wow. Jeez. You just can't win, can you? No.
You know, I remember when I did the Epic Rap Battle, you know, how could you portray trans people as someone that changes like a monster changes? Like, no, you kind of missed the point of what we were doing there. What we were trying to inform is that the Hulk wasn't necessarily a monster. The Hulk was the Hulk, and just one that was a completely separate person that needed to be completely separate and be himself. And that was, you know, what kind of Caitlin was trying to get across, but it's so missed because they can only focus on that one visual image. So I didn't have, even with that, it wasn't like, oh, you did such a great job, thanks to LGBT. He's proud of you. It's like, oh, you kind of made a mockery of trans people.
Wow. So how did you meet up with the Epic Rap Battle people? Did they see your work, or did you contact them?
I just randomly got a message from Nice Peter, who really is like Nice Peter, the nicest guy you'll ever like speak to in your life.
It'd be great if he was just like an absolute dick.
But that's
what my name is. Ironic. Nice.
Yeah, no, they're both really nice guys, and but yeah, that'd be hilarious if you're like just a super asshole.
Yeah, we're calling on behalf of Nice Peter. Like, he doesn't like to talk to people personally.
Don't look at him straight in the face. He's against that.
Eye contact is something to avoid with Nice Peter.
I saw Nice Peter kill a man.
Well, the sound bites from this is going to make you look really bad. He just hit me up and, you know, are you interested in this? And it's kind of like, you know, like, hey, do you want a record deal or something? Yeah, of course I'm interested in, you know, this. And my kids, you know, like, I tell them, oh, I'm battling and my battle got 300,000 views. Oh, well, that's fantastic. But I told them I was doing Epic Rap Battles, and they were excited, you know, legitimately excited. So, and they hit me up, And then one of the guys from the show, and I'm so upset that I can't remember his name right now, but he's actually, he saw my battles and told them when they decided that they wanted to do a Caitlyn Jenner battle that I existed. And so then Nice Peter, like, I mean, when I say he went through my catalog, like, he actually watched videos that I did before I even did Battle Rap of just me talking about my transition.
Really?
So he really kind of, you know, he went in depth into researching me and making sure that I was the right person. He really wanted to get across the positive message with that video and really wanted to inspire people. And it's just sad that, you know, basically the non-LGBT people were like, the cisgender people had a problem with it because they felt like I had too many lines and the Hulk didn't. And then a lot of LGBT people had a problem with it because, you know, they didn't like how I transitioned. But I did, you know, there's always mixed. I did have good reaction too. So we reached a few people that, you know. Obviously, we're positively affected. So,
let me ask you something. Do you find you're in battle rap? So, you know, like similar to comedy, things are obviously exaggerated and they're done for effect and they're done for a certain feeling. Same thing, like even with the video, you know, they're done for a certain effect, for a cheap laugh, or you know, do you find just, you know, even in the LGBT community or any community, you find things are just what people are just way too sensitive about everything. I mean, I assume as a battle rapper, you got to be, you know, you got to be able to take all sorts of things and not take things too seriously.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't take anything. I mean, if I'm sensitive about anything, I'm done. I already lost before I even, you know, got in the ring. And to be honest, I think, you know, I think there are groups that have been marginalized throughout years who obviously they have a right to be upset and angry about certain topics. But I also think that people need to see, to hear when jest is in the voice, you know, when somebody's making a comment and you can hear that they're being playful or they're doing it to, because there's a crowd and that's why they're there. Like, I literally did a battle where the guy, I mean, he was bad. I mean, he went in on, you know, my family and, like, you know, how my kids were affected by this. And the crowd was much more hurt by it than I was because it was in Seattle. And, you know.
Right.
I mean, they're very, you know, very, very liberal. And they were just not feeling it. I think if that same battle would have happened in Texas, the crowd would have gone crazy for it. So,
that's something I actually wanted to ask you about Texas. You obviously, you know, you picture Texas, you picture a lot of right-wing kind of conservative types. How do you fit in there or stand out? Or is there like a whole other side to Texas that we don't really see, you know, living, you know, we're in Jersey, like, that we don't know? Is there a big supportive community that we're not really, you know? I mean, I know like Austin's pretty progressive and whatnot, but do you get that elsewhere in Texas?
Well, actually, Dallas has the third largest per capita gay population in the country.
Really?
Wow.
I would have never guessed
that.
Yeah. And the other thing about Texas that's really weird, like, I was living in a town called Forney, which is, like, east of Dallas, and just before you get to Terre, where Jamie Foxx grew up in. This small little town that was slowly becoming a suburb, you know? So it was progressing a little bit in its values and its views and all that kind of stuff, but I literally never there felt out of place or uncomfortable during my transition. Because there's one thing about Texas is they kind of have this don't tread on me kind of attitude.
Right.
And they apply that to everybody. So say if I'm in a restaurant and was being harassed by somebody, chances are someone else would step up and be like, you don't do that here. Hmm. Don't talk to people like that. And if you do, let's walk outside and I'll take care of it for you. And it's just, you ever see that What Would You Do show?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They did a What Would You Do where basically the waitress was treating a gay couple bad. Hmm. Like 8 out of 10 times someone said something or did something.
It's interesting.
And the other time no one ever like said a negative thing. They did it in New York. Not one single person helped the gay couple. Oh, it's their business. Has nothing to do with us. In the Mississippi, about half the people actually encouraged the behavior. Hmm. So
it's interesting.
You see, like, in New York, they didn't care either. It's like, you know, that's their problem. I'm not, you know, I'm out of it. Mississippi is like, no, get them out of here. And in Texas, it's like, no. We might not, and you'd have people, hey, we might not agree with how they live their life, but you don't talk to them like that. You know, you'll hear that kind of thing. So I've always, if they have a problem with me, their smiles to your face and they they talk about the problems behind your back.
It's a very, very interesting, like, I guess that's not really a take, but an interesting, it's something you would never think of, like, you know, from other states. Like, we don't think like that. You think of Texas as, oh boy, like, you know, very old school, you know, very conservative and whatnot. So it's pretty good to hear.
Well, you know, in Tyler in the late 90s, there was a group of kids that would literally go out and hunt gay people, you know. So, I mean, it's not far removed from the thoughts that people have. And I wouldn't want to be in southeast Texas in the middle of the piney woods, you know, with people knowing who I was. I tell you that right now. Like, because it just takes one ignorant person. But being in the city, being around other like-minded people or even people who go to church on Sunday and think, you know, your life is your life and that's your business. They're really not bad people to live with.
That's kind of nice.
Everyone here, like, anytime I go anywhere else, I make eye contact with people when I walk by them and I nod at them or I say hello. And if I go anywhere else, I always get looked back like I'm crazy. But here, hey, how are you doing? Or they've already said hi to me first.
Wow.
Well,
very nice.
Sticking up for Texas. I like
it. Learn different stuff.
Here. I know. So what's in the future here? Do you think about putting out albums, like as far as straight rap albums and also I was going to ask you, are you able to make a living just off of like battle rapping or do you do other things too?
Oh, no, I definitely have to work other jobs. Basically, my trips are usually paid for. I usually have money to walk around with, you know, like stuff like that. Like maybe a little bit to come home with. It's definitely not a way to make a living. But I when I started this, where I've gotten now, I never expected to do an epic rap battle of history. I didn't expect to be in Vice magazine. There's a lot of things I did not expect to happen.
Beyond Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Yeah, that was the biggest one.
Right, yeah. You know. Mike Scott, the best. but yeah. Forget BBC, you guys.
It's all downhill from there. Let's face it. It's all downhill.
Just retire.
Yeah. Hang up the mic.
But I've reached my pinnacle. Okay. I got it. But this is neat. You know, this is, my mom never did anything like this. You know, my parents never did anything like this. I'm doing something different than most of my friends are doing. You know, my friend travels because he pushes dents, you know, when people have hail work done, you know, but I like the way I travel a lot better.
I would say that's a little bit more interesting anyway.
Let me ask you, the epic rap battle, about how long does that take to shoot, and do you have any input on the song itself, or did they pretty much have it laid out when you got there?
I think they had I actually think they had a verse for me when I got there, but I didn't really ask. I was just like assumed that I was going to be writing. So like, I just like, oh, by the way, I happen to have this. And then it ended up being a combination of what they wrote and kind of what I wrote. And I think you can tell especially if you're an epic rap battle fan, it's not their norm. You know, you'll get the medal without the decathlon. That's not a typical epic rap battle line, you know.
Right.
referring to getting the gun versus the gold medal. Like,
yes.
That's definitely battle rap wordplay. So, but they had exactly they knew what they wanted, you know, which was different for me because as far as writing goes, as having an opponent still, that's a pretty broad stroke, you know, where I can pick from 10, 15 subjects about this one person, where with Caitlin, they really wanted it to be a positive thing. Like, I'm putting you down, but at the same time, I'm building you up. So it was neat just having to work off of like kind of a template like that.
Definitely. So before we get out of here, like I was saying, what's in the future for you? What do you... are you working on anything? Are you working on albums? Is there anywhere we can see you? And also, where can people go and check you out?
Well, my most recent battle was with Bonnie Godiva on the bots. Well, it's actually Counterproductive is the channel, but it's called the Bots Battle League. So if you look up Bots, you'll find it. If you look up Counterproductive, you'll find it. The No Shame versus Bonnie Godiva from Wild and Out, which is a really good battle. It's one round. So if you have a short attention span, we get you in and out of there really quick.
Okay, sign me up.
And it's good. It's really good material. And I'm actually going to be working a lot with the Bots people from now and in the future. Dirtbag Dan, who is the owner of that station, is a supporter of mine. He's always kind of looked out for me. So I have the date saved for July 28th and 29th. I should be out in San Jose for my next battle. I don't know who it's against quite yet. And I'm working on trying to get onto KOTB, which is a huge league, but I still working on that. So
awesome.
But definitely check me out on the bot, and you can also check me out on AHAT and No Coast Battle League.
Awesome.
My last question, what was the sickest burn that you gave somebody and the sickest one you got back at yourself?
I think if it's real simple, though, to me, it was really simple. Someone said basically that I look like, what's his name? Guy from Face Off.
Nicolas Cage.
I look like John Travolta. Oh. I look like Nicolas Cage if he actually had his face. Well, his face. that was probably the. I mean, I couldn't help myself but laugh at that one. And I don't know. I've had a couple favorites. I was battling a kid named Kid K. I said if I revived Michael Jackson, let him put his hands on the kid, he still wouldn't be as bad as me. That was one of my favorites. But I think the most, like I kind of had to thinker was with my words on nights, all the way to my core. With him, I'd explain that world peace was defense so he could know what a metaphor.
Wow.
So that he would understand that meta world peace was a defensive play. So, yeah.
That's some deep thinking. That was probably, right
there. Yeah. And that kind of you're like, what? That's one of the what? Actually, one against Bonnie Godiva that I really like. This whore gets a name in the hood, and it's not for the hell of it. They call her the O-line because she's known to open up the gap so brothers can eat like Zeke Elliott.
Yes. Well, No Shame. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes on the show here. And good luck with everything you got going on.
Same to you guys. Appreciate you having me, and good luck with the show, and best to you guys in the future.
All right. We still should have had you battle rap.
Yeah. Been,
my name is The Barrels, and I drop big bombs.
Oh, was I supposed to continue?
My lap lyrics are nasty. They're kind of like psalms.
Oh. Yeah, I would have said that.
You must like it. You have no qualms.
When I go to Campbell, I go to the palms.
There you go. I was going to say, all right, next job. Battle rapping out.
Yeah. There's no entry-level battle rapper, so.
Yeah, I don't see you spending your days in Newark, like, practicing. But, and that was No Shame.
Oh, definitely cool. And, again, another interview where we went a little deeper than the initial reason why we brought him on there. So that was really cool, you know.
Absolutely. All right, let's take a quick break. All right, so the marathon episode continues.
Mm-hmm. And did you see they almost broke the two-hour marathon?
Alex was just telling me about that.
Yeah, it's guy, insanity. 2 hours and like 23 seconds. I mean, it's technically a world record, but they don't count it because it was like a test run. But
that's ridiculous.
I mean, what? I can't even
figure that out. 4.5 miles per hour for 2 hours.
Gee, oh, those Kenyans.
No,
God.
No, sorry. No, 4 minutes and 30 second mile. So it's like 13 miles per hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a marathon's 26.2, so it's 13, a little faster than 13 miles per hour.
Yeah. Jesus.
But anyway, we actually have three interviews lined up today, so this is going to be a long one. Last week you heard us with...
This is more strenuous than that two-hour one.
Yeah. you heard us with Sam Shriver, and this week, Susan Robb, who helps sponsor this show, helps us work with
good
friend Paul Templer. Okay, she is with a woman named Kim Ward, okay, and her and Paul Templer are producing a 24-part documentary on survivors of all different kinds. Their first expedition is in 2 weeks in Nepal as they trek through the Himalayas, okay, to film the first man in history to summit Everest with one arm. So we'll give them a call and see what's going on.
Interesting.
And then, let's see what's going on. Dun, 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 dun. Maybe. Oh, there we go.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, who is it?
This is Scott Brennan from the Verbal Shenanigans, along with my partner here, Mike Berlew.
Hello.
Oh, God, what's up?
Are you?
Man, she is too happy for this show. Can you dial it down a bit?
Yeah, take the energy. Let's lower it down.
How dare you be happy on our show?
No, we need the energy. Keep the energy up.
All right, we'll slow our roll a little bit, fellas.
Hold on. Where are you? Like 7,000 meters away from your phone? Because it sounds like you're in a tunnel.
Yeah, we're in the car. I know it.
There you are.
Is that gonna be?
Yeah, no. You're gonna have to be a little louder than that. Otherwise, it's gonna sound like we're interviewing you in a vortex.
Okay, so let's try this.
Oh, she fell. I think.
Something. Hello.
Yes.
Hello?
All right. This is like a pre-record, right?
Yeah,
that's what we say until it all makes the cut.
I can't believe we went live this week.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right.
Anyway. So this is Kim, correct?
Yes. This is Kim.
And is Susan with you too or no?
Yes. Susan's right here.
Okay. So, we kind of got the lowdown here, or a little intro, that you're working with our good friend Paul Templer, correct?
Correct.
And if those of you who don't know Paul Templer, we did two episodes with him. He is a man who survived a hippo attack.
Mm.
Quite a interesting story here. Now, what are you doing with Paul?
So, I interviewed Paul back in 2011 on my own show, and I kind of fell in love with his story and then the idea of how people survive horrific events in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So, I created this television show idea where I wanted to kind of walk in the footsteps of survivors and go to the places where they had these accidents and they had to overcome their adversity. So, Paul and I are doing this. We're doing our pilot episode in Nepal. We're going to be trekking for 8 days. And our survivor is Gary Geller, who is the first man in history to summit Mount Everest with one arm.
Now, first off, how do you... are you doing this all out of your own expenses? Are you shooting it and then trying to pitch it? Or you guys have some like backing going on? Where are you doing this for?
Right. So at the moment, this is a project that we're so passionate about that we're self-funding it. I'm actually from Wisconsin, and at the moment I'm in Toronto because we're working on talking to different sponsors, trying to get people aboard, trying to, you know, spread the word about it, get people passionate about what we're doing, and get ourselves off the bankroll of it.
Wow. So I'm assuming this is not cheap. using my deduction skills here.
They use their iPhone camera to shoot the show.
Yeah.
You know, that cuts down on cost savings.
They strap a GoPro to Paul's head.
You wouldn't believe how much goes into it. I mean, at the end of the day, just doing like a 3-minute sizzle reel is like $30,000. So now imagine a full 8-day production in Nepal with a cameraman, a voice guy, our drones up in the air taking pictures, the, you know, the talent, the hotels, the food, the Sherpas we need to hire, the helicopter rides. And then, of course, we want to leave some money behind to some of the remote villages. You can imagine the cost that is associated with that. And then there's post-production. That's hours and hours.
It is. I work with a lot of post-production stuff. It's I'm not even, like, closely with that project involved that big.
But I can only imagine the cost. So what ways are you, how are you trying to fundraise? You just knocking on doors and say, give me money, or what's going on here?
Well, we started at the ground level with local sponsors, people that we already knew about the project, knew about my passion for it. This is something that I've been involved in for over 5 years developing. And then Susan is helping us greatly. She's going to, CEOs and upper clientele and going to them and pitching our story and telling them what we're doing. And we're just sort of spreading our wings and starting a sponsorship roller coaster here. So, and then, we're just looking at people, too, who might, this might resonate with them. Maybe they're a survivor. Maybe their dad was. Maybe their brother was. Maybe this is something they want to see come to mainstream media, and they would like to get involved. We're also going to sponsors to have a great clothing brand or, boots that would be appropriate for these kind of adventures, and they would like to do some serious branding with that. So we're kind of open to sponsorship on all levels.
Interesting. Mm. Now, I have survived over 100 episodes with my co-host here, and that alone deserves an episode of your show. So,
I'm the co-host, by the way.
It's torturous.
New Jersey, right?
Yeah, and we live in New Jersey. That's survival.
Scott,
right there.
Did we start yet?
So that would be like our urban survival series, and that would be intense. And we'd have to probably be living on the street, filming you guys, fighting off robbers and all that kind of good stuff. But it could be intense.
So
if it's a sponsor, we could do it.
So that's the image you have of New Jersey. We live in the street and fight off robbers.
That's the first time anybody ever called me urban before.
If you saw Mike, I'll send you a picture of Mike. And you use the adjective urban, you're going to feel real off on your assumption.
I don't think Tide will give you any money for that show.
We walk around the streets just fighting off thugs all day long. That hippo story is nothing compared to living in Jersey for
a few
years.
You remember the game Street Fighter 2? That was us.
Yeah.
Look, guys, I have been to New Jersey a lot, and there are areas that are sketchy. The way you guys drive, that's like survival right there.
Yeah, because we have this. You're from Wisconsin. What do you drive, a tractor 4 miles an hour? Yeah. What are you talking about?
A four-wheeler or a snowmobile.
Yeah, exactly. You don't even have a challenge to drive. There's no other things to crash into.
I'm very safe when I drive and I'm texting. I look up every 8 seconds. That's a general rule.
No.
Our danger is we can be lulled to sleep looking at the cornfield too long.
Yeah, but you're all wearing that stupid cheese hat to protect you if you crash.
Packers!
It's just protection. If you wrap your head around the steering wheel, it just bounces off.
Are you alive? Yes. Go Packers.
Favre's the greatest.
I have no idea.
I figure most of you guys just drive around at a 2.0 blood alcohol level most of the time anyway, right?
Well, they sit out on the ice lakes fishing for 12 hours, so that's when their alcohol level goes down.
Right,
that's
how it works. Actually how they stay alive in the Wisconsin winters. Yeah.
That's the only food, ice fishing.
I got a diet of cheese and PBR.
So you guys are actually kind of right on that. Statistically, and this has been a proven fact, Wisconsin is one of the biggest drinking states, and actually we're one of the biggest drinkers in the entire world.
Mm. I watch Laverne and Shirley, so I'm quite aware.
Yeah.
All those bottles.
I've been to that brewery.
Yeah, I bet you. I can just picture a lot of them singing that drunkenly at night.
We're gonna do it. We're gonna do it. Brett Favre, rule number four. So you do us something.
Well, if you're gonna throw the Jersey things out there, we're just gonna have to. Don't worry, I don't really support this place yet.
Fight fire with fire, hey boys.
Well, actually, we're not. We're actually looking out at a lake right now, believe it or not. So we're not in the middle of the streets of Newark with our guns.
Oh, yeah. That's our day job.
I wonder what you're being arrested.
Oh, no, I don't know why.
Yeah, usually interviews work really well when someone's yelling in the background, tell them about the arrest!
Scott, ask her the question.
What about getting arrested at the airport? Well, I was actually coming to New Jersey, and I had, for my son had thrown a big hunting knife in my carry-on, and it was like one of those huge, like, 9-inch knives with a gutting hook, and I went through TSA with it, and it was confiscated, and then they called the sheriffs, and I was arrested, and that was, like, the first time I was going to come to Jersey by myself. I never did make the trip because my flight was canceled, and I was detained for a couple hours. So maybe that's why I have this vision of, like, thugs and gangs.
But so, you're the one bringing the thug life to Jersey.
Yeah. Is that like a Wisconsin tradition? Throw the knife into the luggage?
Reverse psychology to make myself feel better. Reverse psychology, my friend.
That's like Wisconsin lawn darts. You throw the knife into the luggage.
I could kill a caribou and slice of sweet cheddar.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. So now that you're banned from Jersey, now when you go to Nepal, so are you guys flying out there?
Yes.
So in a couple weeks, correct? So make sure you pack smartly. Mm-hmm. Keep your son away from your luggage.
Yeah.
Because it would really stink if Paul goes to fly and you're not there because you're arrested again.
They're at a high altitude, so they can only pack 4 cheese heads to bring up there. Right. Only 4.
I'm going to check all my luggage so I have no worries.
50 pounds of cheese is not – that's like nothing.
No.
But anyway, so you're flying to Nepal. Like what kind of preparation – first off, what kind of weather are you expecting there? Is it still cold there? What are you preparing for?
No, we're flying into Kathmandu, and it's about 82 degrees right now. They just ended their monsoon season, so it's like really beautiful weather. And it'll be, like, in the mid-80s most of the day and at night. And some of the more higher altitudes we're going to, it'll drop to, like, 64, 70 degrees.
Oh, so it's just a vacation, then.
Yeah.
Well, it will feel
some
like
survival,
a vacation,
man. Remember,
we're going to be filming, like, 12 hours out of the day. And this is going to be going for 8 days straight. And we're trekking through some pretty rough terrain, and we have to stop and get shoots and shots during that. And part of it, we're sleeping in these remote villages, and all we have is a sleeping bag, and that's it. We're sleeping on the ground or the floor of a tea house.
Now, you have this survivor planned. You know, I'm sorry for his name,
Gary Guller.
So
Guller.
Okay, so you have him planned, and you said you're going to film a whole different series. Who else do you guys have on the horizon here?
So I also want to film Nando Parado. Back in the 70s, he made the headlines everywhere because he's the gentleman who airplane crashed into the side of a mountain with his entire rugby team.
He
lived to tell the tale. And he literally survived like 2 months on the mountain, and he walked from Argentina to Chile after being starved and, you know, up there surviving for how long. And by walking off the mountain from one country to another, he saved the remaining 16 survivors. So he's one of them that's on my list.
Are they the ones that ate each other?
That's what I was thinking.
That movie Alive, I think it was?
Yeah.
It is. It was pure survival. Yep.
Mm. Nice.
Wow.
And I've interviewed him, and, you know, I never even talk about that part. To me, what's important is that he saved, like, 16 people by doing what he did. And, like, you find someone who could be, like, starved to death, and in his situation, he survived a plane crash and concussion, saw his sister and mom die, and then, he walks from Argentina to Chile on his own and saved the life of 16 people. That's incredible.
Jeez.
Absolutely. What other kind of survivors? So you got that's a good two to start with, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then we just got done interviewing Yossi Ginsberg. We just, in February, were in Israel filming him. And that was just kind of like a promotional start. We were going to probably have to refilm that. But he survived lost in the Amazon jungle for 21 days, I believe. And he was near death, but he made it out alive. So, like, the last rescue boat was coming around the bend just as he had given up hope. And he was ready to just fall in this puddle and die. And he was rescued at the very, very end. But he was in such bad shape. He had bugs that had made their home underneath his skin, and he was being eaten alive from the inside out. He had no skin left on the bottom of his feet. He was dehydrated, stalked by a jaguar. And, you know, the guy made it out. His partner didn't. You know, his friend didn't.
Now, have you ever thought about interviewing the band Survivor?
They're a good group.
Interviewing who?
You know, the band Survivor.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, come on. They're the ones who did... hold on, let me find their hits.
Yeah. You know they're a good band. Well, you have to go, wait a sec, let me Google what they did.
Didn't they do something for...
Oh, the band.
Yeah, they did Burning Heart. They did Eye of the Tiger.
Oh.
Come on.
That'd be the
Rocky
good episode. 3
soundtrack.
No, I haven't really given that too much pause, but I could.
I would interview Hulk Hogan. He survived the Survivor Series.
He also survived this latest lawsuit he got and came out on top. But so it sounds like you got a lot of things going on. What kind of things are you worried about, or how are you trying to pitch this to a network? Or are you going to release it online? What is the actual plan for the footage and whatnot?
Well, a lot of it has come together. So our cameraman, who we met in Israel a couple months ago, who has worked on The Amazing Race and a ton of other projects, has now come on to our project as our full-time cameraman. He introduced me to a producer who's done a lot of films, I think like 41, and he's latched on to our script, and he's working with us now, and he's going to help us take this to some companies internationally and try to get it into the European market first. And then once that takes off, then we'll start coming into America. I would like to see it as a Netflix or a Hulu type thing, because I don't want to go to something too big where I lose control of the project, because really it's the stories of these people that I want to be authentic, and some of these bigger networks, you'll lose that.
What's your vision of the show? Is it going to be like a narration of their stories? Is it going to be an interview type show?
No, it's going to be really adventurous, awe-dropping, Indiana Jones-type style, but we're also going to capture, like, really authentic moments, intimate moments with these people. Have you guys ever seen way back, and I think it was in the 70s or 80s, the show Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous?
Yes.
Yeah, so my vision was, it's a kind of a show like that. You're entering into these people's lives, into their world, into the moment where they almost died. And it's fascinating, and you want to know what they went through, and you want to know how they made it out on the other end. But instead of being rich and famous, they're survivors. It's just a little bit of a twist. Who gives a crap what kind of car they have and how much money is in their bank? It's going to be a different twist to that.
Well, it sounds like you got definitely an awesome project going on. It sounds like a very large undertaking, both financially and creatively, to put together. I know you guys need some help, so what is the information on raising the funds and whatnot, and how are you going about it, and where can people look at your stuff?
Yeah, so it would be great if people would go visit our website. You can get a ton of information about myself, about Paul, about 90 North, and there is an awesome sponsorship packet that you can download right off the website that shows you our reach. Like, we have over a million reach on Facebook and all this great reach. So it's 90nmedia.org. And if you go there, you can get all the information you need. And then there's phone numbers. People can call me. They can call Susan. They can call Paul. They can call whoever they want off the sponsorship pack. And it could be, you know, $10. It could be $10,000. It could be product. It doesn't really matter. We're very open to anything, as long as people really have a passion about the project.
Awesome. We had two really good episodes with Paul, and really appreciate his work, and then a lot of the great guests Susan has got us. So I'm sure you're headed in the right direction, and we wish you best of luck with the fundraising efforts, and have fun in Nepal. I bet you it's a lot more interesting than Wisconsin. I mean, have fun in Nepal.
Yeah. It's no gang right, area like New Jersey. You know,
and let us know when you film the Survivor episode in New Jersey, all the thugs and stabbings that we fend off.
I'll look you up next time I'm there if I make you past DSA. And thanks so much for having me on your program, and the best of luck with it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Take care.
Appreciate it.
Bye. All right. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. And for our next interview. No. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely sounds like a pretty worthwhile project. That's a big, it's a big undertaking, putting together like a whole show without like having like a destination is being filmed for yet. So it's I can't even imagine the fundraising effort.
It's crazy. It kind of reminds me of NASCAR with some of these drivers who are like good drivers, but all the owners are like, well, unless you bring sponsorship with you, I can't really do anything with you. And just a struggle of when you have this great idea, in this case, or a great driver, you can't get it out there until you find that funding.
So I think it's time to get out of here. What do you think?
Fine, I guess.
Let's just bring on like more. Just call people on your phone. Like,
hey, Tom Magnana.
What's the we could do like a telethon one day, like 24-hour podcast.
24-hour shenanigans.
Not the worst idea.
No.
But it'd be really funny to see us recording at like hour 23.
Obi, stop it. Stop barking.
But Berlew, anything to promote or
I'll
support?
Just, do my page, mberlew721 on Facebook.com.
You sounded so excited when you said that. I'll just support my page or something.
But when I do my Tonight in The Walking Dead, I'm working on a few new stuff to start adding on to the site. So Facebook.com and mberlew721.
All right. And I'm going to promote... I guess I'll promote where I'm going to be at Sona 13 in Morristown on May 18th.
Oh,
Sona
very nice.
In Morristown.
You should work in Morristown.
Way to bring the bottle down. But anyway, the best thing you guys can do is subscribe to the podcast. Share the podcast with your friends. Say, hey, this was really interesting. Check these guys out.
Check out their 14th interview that night.
Yeah. They interview. I mean, this is just what you get with this show. Mm-hmm. Three completely different guests. They just happen to be all on one date. Mm-hmm. And the best thing is also, if you like this episode, go back and check out some of the other ones. There's just tons of like interesting guests. Just check out the page and whatnot. But like I said, the best thing you can do is share the episode with your friends, and review it on iTunes. Again, you can listen to it on Stitcher, on iTunes, on Laughable App. There's a lot of places to go. And also, you're smart. Google Verbal Shenanigans.
Duh.
And follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Why not? Go for all of them. Yeah. But anyway, life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep doing it at your back. Bye-bye.
Later. Ha ha ha.